Hello, welcome to the Business of Show Business with me, Jamie Boddy. Today, I'm joined by Alexa Morden, who is an actor, who's a coach and the driving force behind the podcast turned CIC, the 98%. In this podcast episode, we'll be talking about the red flags actors should avoid, the human behind the craft, and all things the business of show business. Alexa, how's it going?
Great, thanks for having me.
Oh no, it's my pleasure. You look like such an English rose today. I feel like I'm sat across from like period drama.
Tell all the casting directors.
Book her now. She can work here or in Canada, either or.
Yes.
So as I touched upon there in the intro, you have your own fabulous podcast, which we will dive into. You've got a book. Quick, give that a little flash to the camera. So you're an author, coach, actor. How do you balance everything?
I don't know is the answer. Yeah. I sometimes ask myself that. I would say at the moment, overworking, no boundaries, hyperfixating, and not leaving the house very often. So I'm trying to be more boundaried and have, you know, practice what I preach, work-life balance. But it's hard when you're building things or doing things that you're passionate about. There's always more to do, as I'm sure you can relate. So trying to get better at that. But I'm one of those people that when there's something to be done, I get it done no matter the cost, to my detriment sometimes.
Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Because I think that will resonate with a lot of listeners or viewers, because we love what we do. It's our hobby. It's our full-time passion. So it's all of a sudden that's like you're clocking in 40, 50, 60-hour work weeks and you don't always get paid for a 40, 50, 60-hour work week. But what drew you to this weird and wonderful career to start with?
Again, hard to answer. I've never really known anything different. My parents said I wanted to be an actor when I was three. And then ever since then, it was just what drama classes can I go to, or, you know, performing sort of things. And my first West End show I ever saw was Oliver. My dad took me for my birthday, and I think I was about seven. And just seeing that for the first time and seeing kids do it and go, oh my God, like, this is where I'm going to be, which was so nice going to see the new show of it recently and going, oh, I am that adult now. But as a kid, you always used to wonder, like, what will I be? What will I do? But yeah, I ticked all the boxes I thought you had to tick to make it in the industry, which is sure our conversation will get to. And then the reality of the industry hit me in the face, and then the rest is history. And now here I am.
And I think that it is that idea, isn't it? Like, is make it even something tangible? Like, what is success to you? Like, you've got a book, success, a podcast that's well listened to. You've been in feature films. But like, has success changed for you, or your view of what success is? Has that changed?
Fundamentally, yes. And it's thanks to the 98%. It's the essence of my book, is how to redefine success so that we can find happiness and fulfillment at any point in our actor journey. And it comes back to the very essence of the 98% when we started it, which is only 2% of actors earn their main source of income from acting work. 98% of us are having to do other things to supplement that, or, you know, keep ourselves going between acting jobs. And of that 2%, you know, there are thousands of actors in the 2% that we won't even know of. But the actors that we turn on our screens and we recognize, and, you know, have publicists and managers, and they're traveled around the world for all of these, you know, A-list jobs, that's like 0.02%. Yeah. So why are we constantly trying to compare ourselves or reach for this thing that for most of us, we're not going to get to? And that's not being negative, it's being realistic, because the sooner you realize that the odds are you're not going to make it in the way you've been told is the dream, the sooner you can start to enjoy your life and find success in so many different ways. And I also feel like by not redefining success, you're constantly trying to get to the next thing. So let's say you take a show to Edinburgh and it doesn't get picked up to go to a West End thing, or it doesn't, you know, get this success story that everyone dreams of with Edinburgh Fringe. Why does that mean that it's not successful for you to have maybe written a one-person show, raise the funds, which is success in itself, get there, and even to have one audience member? That's a huge success. And then too many actors let that pass them by because it's like, well, it doesn't look like Fleabag, or it doesn't look like Six, or, you know, all the very amazing things that are worth all the success that they had. It doesn't come down to talent or skill. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I was leading a feature film, and 2 days after being flown home, I was back waiting tables. And if I hadn't done the work that I have done, I would have been like, oh my God, I'm so depressed. Like, I was living my dream and now I'm back, you know, doing the thing that I hate, that I'm only doing so that I can be an actor. And I used to think, you know, I'm an actor, but I'm waiting tables. And now I think I'm an actor, actor because I wait tables or because I do whatever it is, because that's what 98% of us are doing. So I was able to enjoy that experience so much more, knowing that it was coming to an end, knowing that it might not suddenly catapult me into the limelight, and going, but that's okay, because that is a version of success. Yeah. That's something that graduate me would have been like so amazed to hear. And also, I have friends that have made it and they don't feel like they've made it. The goalposts are always changing. There's always someone doing better and worse than you, you know.
I think it's always hard, isn't it? Like, now that we're mildly older, we can maybe see it through a slightly different lens than when you are maybe new into the industry. And I think it's hard because, again, it's that almost toxic positivity of that next audition is going to change your life. Yes, yes. And what I think has been really interesting with Heated Rivalry, if you've seen that show.
Have I seen it?
The audience have got mental because they were waiters. And then here they are, they're now walking fashion shows, they're hosting award ceremonies. And I'm like, maybe, not saying that will change the audience skew of it, but I'm like, yes, see, actors, they are plucked from obscurity or that overnight success, but they've literally been hustling for like 15 years.
But also what annoys me about that conversation is when unknowns are suddenly, you know, get really successful is everyone acts really surprised. Like, isn't this amazing? It's like, no, there's tens of thousands of us just like that, that if we were given the chance or had the luck, that you'd be surprised about how amazing, you know, we are too. And you never, like, Heated Rivalry is amazing. And I love that story, but you could also get a lead role in a TV show that gets axed after one season and not be hosting awards ceremonies and still be successful.
Yes. So you've got your podcast, which we'll dive into wholeheartedly momentarily, but you've interviewed a lot of amazing creatives on that. Are there any patterns you've noticed from the ones that are maybe a bit more content? I don't want to say the ones that are more success, because again, we don't know what success is now, but any patterns or key themes that come up for the creatives you interview that seem a lot more content with being in this crazy world?
Interestingly, the ones that I've learned the most from are the people we've interviewed who are no longer in the industry or who chose to leave acting behind, or are still in the industry but not acting, you know, doing other things. Because these are people that A, would have left the industry a lot sooner if it weren't for this never give up, don't quit, you never know what's around the corner, like this pervasive idea that we just have to keep going and we just have to keep, you know, sacrificing everything else just to make it. And then realizing when they finally do leave how much happy they are out of it, of going, you know, people say to me, Alexa, why are you still in the industry when you're so aware through the 98% of like all the malpractice stuff and how rotten this industry like is? They're like, how can you still be in it? Because I love acting and I love performing. And it's an active choice that I'm making to be in the industry. Whereas it used to be, there's nowhere else I can be, you know, acting's who I am. Yeah. Actually, you know, disengaging from that idea and going, do I want to be doing this? And lots of people go, actually, no. And I go, yes, I do. But therefore, I deserve to be happy and fulfilled, feeling successful, whether or not I'm acting. So I think that's been a real pattern, is people going, looking back and going, oh, I was really mentally unwell. I had a very unhealthy relationship to my career. And learning from that and going, okay, how do I continue having a healthy relationship, choosing to stay in it? And then I'm not going to go off on more tangents about things from casting directors and stuff, because then we get into the nitty-gritty of
but I think it's hard. It doesn't necessarily have to be this or that. There is a world where hopefully it can be a positive, healthy experience. And I wish I'd known at college that freelance doesn't necessarily mean 100% of your time and income is from freelance.
No.
You could be full-time and freelance at the weekend or evenings, or use your annual leave part-time and then freelance. There's so many combinations, I think, but sometimes I think we're so hyper-focused that maybe we don't see the other opportunities or how the industry is. So speaking about what you spoke about there, the 98% started off as a podcast, now a CIC, which is a community interest company.
Yes.
Just learned that.
Yeah.
You do a lot of exposing. People trust you, which is glorious, but also probably exhausting for you. And obviously being a journalist and understanding legality and right to reply and defamation, we often have a lawyer's team. When you work at a huge publication, you would send an article that might be problematic via the lawyer team. With you, you're pretty much a team of one dealing with this. How are you balancing that? Like, that's an amazing, but it's like, you're like, it's a burden you have to carry.
I mean, there's two separate things. So now as a CIC, I do have an, like, amazing people that support me behind the scenes. You know, I have a board, I have advisors, I have industry people that I WhatsApp every day, whether that's to bang my head against a wall or have them listen or ask for their advice or their questions or, you know, insight. Yeah. It is me running it, doing all the things. And when that first started doing the podcast, I mean, you have to go into the whole lore of, you know, the Bodhi talent scandal and going all the way back to us on the podcast, talking about, you know, abuse in the arts or sharing people's story. Like, that's where it started. People understood that I, the 98%, was somewhere they could come and just be listened to. Yeah. A lot of the time it's like, I don't expect you to do anything, but no one's ever listened to me or heard me or like held space for this experience. And then, yeah, in terms of now being a CIC, I got to the point where I get so many reports every day about industry wrongdoing from people that literally have nowhere else to go. And then I've experienced it myself, going to the union, going to other organizations, trying to get help, being stonewalled. And I got to the point a couple of years ago where I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I do it completely voluntarily. And if I want to continue, I need to be funded, especially like with the podcast. You know, it costs money to podcast. It's a lot of time.
We don't know this cute for free.
And all the investigation and, you know, supporting people, that's a lot of it. You know, people see me exposing people. I do a lot more of supporting people behind the scenes, trying to get their money, trying to report this, yada, yada, yada. So I sat down with someone who really supports my work and I said, I want to do a new podcast series, which I was telling you about off air. More info to come. And I said, but I need funding because I need a legal advisor. Like, I want to be able to pay the actors coming on, sharing their story. And they suggested becoming a CIC, a community interest company, which is essentially a non-profit. You can't make profit from it. All the money you make has to go into the community it serves, which is perfect for 98%. And it also means I can give myself a wage. So pay myself for everything I've already been doing for free for 8 years, whether that's producing, writing, editing the podcast, or being an advocate, an activist, a victim support person, like going to the, I'm in contact with police officers and journalists and legal teams, supporting people going through things. And if you're a CIC, you know, an organization, it's easier to apply for funding or hopefully get philanthropic donations than just a person like, can you give me money, please?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I guess I'll be founding director of a company then, because that's not a lot of work. So I went through all that process last year, but this is the beginning of a new chapter now, because I have a lot of plans and ideas and projects. And once I can start getting grants or donations or whatever, then we can really put our foot on the gas, because things need to change and conversations need to be had, and no one else is having them. But the more we ignore it, the worse they're getting. It's not going to go away.
So Alexa, at the time of recording, your book has literally come, hold it up for the camera again, beyond the spotlight. So it's probably an offshoot of all of your streams in one.
Yes.
Where did you start with this book, and maybe where did that seed plant and blossom?
Well, so my dad, actually, who is a fan favorite guest of the 98%, because he's a performance psychologist, and we talk a lot about resilience and, you know, frame of mind. Yeah. And he talks a lot about, in his career, he's worked a lot with elite athletes. And, you know, if you train the hardest and you're up the earliest and you finish the race first, you win the gold medal. Acting is not like that. It's purely subjective. You know, you can be the best in the room, know everyone, want it the most, you know, be the best at the character doesn't mean that you're going to get the part. So we talk a lot on the podcast about how to navigate that, really, as an actor. And he asked me, I guess a year and a half ago, have you ever thought about writing a book? Because by then I'd been a coach for almost a year. Yeah. I had 100 private bookings in the first 7 months and like realized, God, people are really resonating with this person first approach, which I'm sure we'll get to. And he's also a coach, obviously. So he was like, have you thought about writing a book? I was like, well, Katie, I started the 98% with back when it was just a podcast. We've always thought about doing a book, the 98%, you know, book for actors, advice in the industry, but we both have so much going on.
Yeah.
And then he was like, well, would you ever write a book with me? I was like, oh my gosh.
Okay.
Okay. it's turned around the other way around. The book's like 90% me and 10% him, but it's a great collaboration because you've got my lived experience and insight, but professional expertise. Mm-hmm. So I talk about the reality, but then it's followed up with, okay, and how do we navigate this? How do we, you know, be okay with this? Built, you know, based on his 40 plus years. So there is no other book out there like it. You know, John Byrne, who's a careers advisor for the stage, he put it really well that, you know, drama acting programs, they train you for the rehearsal room and to be on set, but they don't prepare you really for the reality and resilience and confidence and all of that. So that's where it sort of started. And then I wrote it in 3 months collectively. Gosh. It just turned out like, okay, I have a lot to say. Like, yeah. And, you know, I talk about abuse and misconduct and abuse of power. And I talk a lot about mental health and well-being. And I really don't shy away from the parts that are usually shied away from, because we have to be booked and busy and hashtag blessed. And we have to put this version of ourselves as an actor out there because this is how we want to be perceived. But that can lead to so much loneliness and isolation. And this book is for people to read it and go, oh, I'm not on my own. I am successful and I can be happy outside of the parameters of what success looks like.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because when you think 98%, that is a huge community all going through the same. But again, we're almost taught to glamorize or put on such a pedestal the rehearsal room, the time on stage, when actually, so do you think people don't talk about the life stuff because it's almost seen as a sign of weakness, perhaps, or the fact that you aren't doing as well as others are?
I think it's that. It's the, you know, we all want to be putting the please to announce tweet out there. And that so often comes from a want to announce our next job. Because it gives us validation. And so this book is all about, and my coaching is all about, how do you get validation from yourself? Because I graduated drama school with no confidence and I went looking for it in an industry, in a business that doesn't actually care about me. Mm-hmm. And then that just made me feel even worse. And now once I've found confidence and value from myself and not from how many auditions or bookings I get, I'm a much better actor. I'm a much better person. I am enjoying my life a lot more. And there's no shame in being out of work for a year, 2 years, 3 years, because so many people are. It doesn't mean anything, but that's just what being an actor is.
And it's interesting because when a celebrity's been interviewed because they're booked this massive film, they will talk about their struggles. And at that point, it's okay to acknowledge.
Exactly.
However, when we are all on that journey to get there, you almost don't. You discourage that. So it's really nice.
The looking back in hindsight, I always said about the 98% is, we aren't looking back at the hard graft. We're knee deep in it. And it's different when you're suddenly famous and on a talk show and you can look back and go, oh yeah, back when I was doing this, because you're at this point now where you feel that you can talk about or romanticize it. But when you're in it, you feel worthless and unknown. You know, that whole thing of being an unknown actor, jobbing actor. But being a jobbing actor is being an actor, full stop, because that's the experience Literally, that most of us are having. And the feedback from the podcast over the years has always just been, oh my God, like, I don't feel alone now. And it's like, hello, let's all wake up to the fact that none of us are. And there's so much pride in, you know, I am a much better actor now than I would have been if I'd graduated drama school and gone straight into a series regular on like a really famous TV show or something. Because my time in this industry, I've gone back and I've had more training. I've had screen acting training. I've learned from those times where I've been out of work. I've got resilient. I've learned how to make the most of the process and be mindful and enjoy the present moment, all from not being in full-time acting work. And there's pride in that too.
And it's, again, it's also like, having more opportunity for success gives you more more times to celebrate, more action points to keep you incentivized. Where if you just, you're that one unicorn, you graduate college, go straight into that musical, and then quite often then you, the fall from grace can be harder than if you do find a period of time when you're back to auditioning or you're with someone who wasn't the college favorite.
Yeah. And like, so I speak to so many actors, and when I coach, I like to send people a form to fill out beforehand so I can do some research and get to know them. And I ask, what's a goal of yours? And so many people, they now just say, I just want to earn my living from acting. And I think that's really interesting because, you know, when I graduate, I want to be on the RSC. I want to lead a Downton Abbey-esque sort of period drama. And it's not that we've lowered the stakes or lowered our ambition. It's just more realistic to go, I just want to pay my bills doing what what I love. And, you know, what TIE springs to mind, theatre and education. You know, you graduate drama school. I don't want to be touring schools doing some play for kids. But you're acting. You're getting paid to act. Like, would you rather that or, you know, pulling pints or something? It's if you're there's happiness and fulfillment in so many forms of acting that is, and again, people are just so desperate to be on the telly. They just want to be on the telly. It's like, is that where does that come from? It comes from a need of being, well, now I feel like a proper actor because I've been on the telly.
Yeah, I even get that now, like when I do like my business coaching and people are like, I want this many followers. But if you actually drill down to the why, it's the want to be liked, the want to be known and respected. But I'm like, but you can be known by your friends and peers and respected and wanted for jobs that isn't on that elevated platform. Like, so what is the why behind that goal, which I love?
So I answer questions and things like this with my act hat on or my coaching hat or my 98% hat. And sometimes they all sort of merge.
Yeah.
And this conversation is one of those because, yeah, I went from that person of going, acting isn't what I do. It's who I am. Like, I'm an actor before anything else. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to the podcast from the beginning, you'll hear me tout that, and now I spout the complete opposite. And I think a perfect example of this is I just ran an actor training retreat with Matt Holt, who's an amazing TV director, and Steph Morgan, who runs Both Feet Actor Training. She's just an incredible soul, and it's all about human-centered breath, body, presence, you know, being vulnerable in a supportive place to like really be open and listen and live acting, you know, all of that. And to see the actors come and leave absolutely transformed as both humans and actors through the work that we did together with a humanist sort of approach would be totally different if it was 3 days of, and this is how you get the headshots, and this is how you get the show on, this is blah, blah, blah. And I totally get we are a business, but with my 98% hat on now, I also notice that with people who really sell this idea of actors being a business, they are also selling other things for actors to do. And it's always hoops that actors have to jump through. You need to get this, or you need to pay for that, or you need to get this updated. And if you do that, then you'll get in the room, or then you'll get a job on TV, or then you'll book this thing, then you'll get an agent. And that can just then put everything on you when you don't get those things. You think it's something to do with you, when a big thing in the book is control the controllables, which is one of my dad's favorite sayings. Like, so my approach is all about the process. Because if you want to get an agent, that's a great aspirational ambition to have, but you can't control if an agent's actually going to want to sign you. But you can control the materials you put together, the email that you feel good about sending, a spreadsheet of the agencies that you want to work with, because having any agent isn't the goal. It's having an agency that you feel comfortable with, that's going to support you. But having a process focus and viewing yourself as a person before anything else, it makes it a lot easier to deal with the setbacks. And I don't really use the term rejection anymore, but you know, that sort of idea, because again, and that comes, so tips, get your validation from yourself. That's number one, because then the no's and the setbacks aren't a personal rebuff. They're just a disappointment as opposed to an emotional spiral that we can all relate to. Dismantle the hierarchy in your mind. Again, if you're looking at casting directors and agents and everyone else on this pedestal, you'll always be on the back foot feeling that you have to impress them. You have to jump through their hoops. We are all just creatives in this industry meeting together to do our jobs. So yeah, internal validation, unlearning the hierarchy, and accepting, that most of our career is out of our control and making being an actor a conscious choice. Like what I was saying earlier, not just, but I have to do it. You don't. It's a choice. This industry is very hard and we can all moan and, you know, get on the phone to our friend and wail at the sky about how unfair it is. But at the end of the day, we're choosing to be in it. So we also owe it to ourselves to be happy every day, whether we're waking up to go to our pay the bills job or to get picked up to go to set. Yeah. Because it's like, I am a great actor. I am great to work with. Every time I've got a job, I've had nothing but amazing feedback. I'm asked back again and again, but you don't walk through the down the street and someone stops me for an autograph. And I don't need that to know that I'm good and that I can show up and do my job well. And that's because I untangled myself from going, I'll feel like a proper actor when external validation, insert here.
It's almost like that saying, isn't it, like eat the frog? Because if you keep saying when this happens, you're putting so much pressure on that. And early on in the Business Show Business podcast, season 2 or 3, I spoke to a dance psychologist, Chelsea, and she mentioned that, again, like athletes, they think about control the controllables. Mm. And I think I love what you said there, because it resonates a lot when I'm working with students as well. I'm like, what can you control on that? You might only be given 80% of what you normally give, but that's your 100% on that day. Yes. And that's okay. And
yes,
it's understanding.
That's nothing. Like, when we go, we're busy. And also, let's say you work in a law firm or you're in a corporate job.
Yeah.
If you stay after hours and you put in the work and you schmooze the boss and you bring in big deals and you make money for that company, you're likely going to get the promotion. But as an actor, you can have the fancy showreel and the headshots and, you know, pay for this and pay for that and jump through all these hoops, and you're not guaranteed to get anywhere.
Nope.
So yes, we're a business, but we're also not the same as other businesses.
Yeah, like there's no set blueprint or structure of like, you'll start as a junior, then you'll be a senior exec, and then you'll be like a regional manager, whatever it is. That and careers aren't, like, success isn't linear anymore, is it? And it's, as you said, like whether you take time off or you're doing something else, it enriches who you are and your offering. Yeah. Before we go, a quick fire and I'll let you go. Who should maybe reach out to the 98%, or who does contact you? What kind of, I don't want to say clients because they're not clients, but who are maybe the voices, anonymous or otherwise, that do come to you? What kind of issues are you noticing in the industry?
Well, first of all, publicists, please don't email me talking about how your clients should come on the podcast because they're super famous and they've worked with all these other super famous people and they're in this super famous, well-known TV show, because you clearly don't know anything about what the 98% is about. But at the moment, in terms of the CIC, I mean, oh my gosh, I'm helping people who've been victims of sex offenders who are using aliases to continue working in this industry to break their parole. Multiple agencies that are withholding pay, that are threatening legal action when people take steps to get the pay that they are owed.
Yes.
Con artists, people embellishing credits or inventing credits. Keep an eye on this story. I'm working on something. This guy who's conning people out of money, pretending he's a producer and he's going to make things for them when really he's nothing of the sort. And he's taking photos from social media from people, snapping pictures of like film sets and posting them on his social media as if he's working on those film sets.
Oh God.
So everyone goes on his Instagram and goes, oh, well, he's working on this and this and this. And they go on his IMDb Pro, go on his IMDb. And because he's got an IMDb Pro account, you can add yourself to anything. No one really checks.
Yeah,
so then he's got these huge movies on his IMDb. It's all made up. And then he's using that to position himself as sort of a guru and con people out of money. The list just goes on and on. I'm currently being harassed by a theatre producer who has over 20 years worth of allegations of wrongdoing against him. And he is just, for the first time ever, his intimidation isn't working because I've done the tips that I went through earlier. Yeah. And he's come up against someone who isn't giving in to his intimidation or his coercion into silence. And he is absolutely throwing his toys out the pram. He's emailing people associated with me, my agent, trying to blacklist me. He's now slandering me. So I've got a police report going. I mean, there's all sorts.
Yeah,
so if you're someone that can support the 98% and keep this work going, because no one has anywhere else to go, really. That's just a glimpse of what's going on at the moment.
Because I think, again, we think this industry is rainbow and unicorns. And if we drill down, people clap us for a living. We do what we love. And you think, shouldn't that be the most smooth sailing life ever? But it is not.
No.
So I'm glad you were there doing that. So before I send you on your way, we end each podcast episode with lights, questions, action. This is quick fire, lighthearted. Quick being the optimal word there. No. Okay, so are you ready?
Yes.
What was your first job in the industry?
Oh, I was in a BBC period drama, and I had a one line with Jim Broadbent, and he was really lovely.
Oh.
And I invited him to my third year drama school show, and he said he'd come and he didn't. But the fact that he said he was going to come was really nice.
We loved Jim.
Yes.
Oh. Okay, I think you may have mentioned it earlier, but what was the first show you saw? Was it Oliver?
Oliver was my first West End.
Okay.
I might have been to like a local panto or something before then.
Biggest myth in the industry you would like to bust?
that someone can blacklist you. Because if someone can blacklist you, I would have been blacklisted already.
She's still going. Yes. One piece of acting advice you think is complete nonsense.
Anyone that's trying to sell a course that guarantees you something. Mm.
Yes, I see those pop up all the time. Yes. And it's like, self-tapes, this view is an actor, love him or hate him.
You got to learn to love them because they're not going anywhere. And that's part of my coaching is I help you get to that point of loving them.
If you weren't in show business, what would you be doing? Maybe a lawyer, who knows?
I think a true crime investigative journalist or something.
One role you'd love to play tomorrow, even if the show has closed or the TV show's wrapped, what show would you love to do?
Oh, so hard. I was a graduate when Downton Abbey was at its height, and I used to always get, oh, you'd be great in that. Thanks, Auntie. Yeah, I have heard that before.
I may know the answer to this, but one book every actor should read.
Beyond the Spotlight by Alexa Morden and Dr. Steenbull. Out now.
And then self-tapes, again, unusual. Sometimes the scripts are wild. What's probably one of the weirdest things you've had to do for a self-tape or an audition?
Oh, well, it wasn't a self-tape, but there was one time at Spotlight HQ where we had to like interpretive dance and I was like pushing myself off the wall, like trying to do things. But I actually had a client recently who had a commercial casting self-tape where they asked him to go to a field and record with a real cow.
Like, that's not necessarily achievable straight away, is it?
Okay. And also dangerous.
Yes.
Cows can be dangerous. And that's coming from a vegan.
My last question, you've just been on a podcast. So do you like to leave a voice note that's the length of a podcast or do you prefer a text message?
Oh, I'm a voice noter. You can't be friends with me if you don't. I've only recently learned that some people find voice notes obnoxious because they're like, you expect me to listen to this. We're not going to be friends. Like you.
Or too fast, 2% fast. Go, 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 go.
Oh, yeah. I always listen on 1.5, but then I expect others to listen on 1.5. And that click and drag up to hold, game changer.
Game changer. Well, thank you so much. All I have to say is make sure you watch, listen and subscribe and comment wherever you get your podcasts and make sure you check out Alexa's work.